Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
I'm Tobin Heath.
And I'm Kristen Press.
We're World Cup champions, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Week in and week out, we sit down with sports legends, cultural icons, and global changemakers to talk everything from clutch games to causes that matter.
This is about creating the future of women's sports, a future that's honest, inclusive, and real.
Join us for our reimagined journey. Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Good morning, everybody. It is a Saturday morning, excuse me, in the Delaware Valley. He's Ray Dinger. I'm Glenn Mack now. And, of course, it is a Sixers Saturday as they try to close out against the Toronto Raptors. First round of the NBA playoffs. And, Ray, it's good that we're feeling about it. Some news came over yesterday. Still uncertain exactly the extent of this, but we do know that Joel Embiid is dealing with a thumb issue. Sixers are listing him as available today. He is supposed to play. He's got a right thumb sprain, some say. Maybe more, some say. Tests will be done. All expectations is that he is going to play through it, manage it. And as long as they are on a run, Joel Embiid will be part of it. So the question becomes to you, Ray, how concerning is this?
Well, up 3-0 in the series, you've got a significant margin of error here where if he's a little off his game for a game or two, it's still not critical. If you were dealing with this and you were down 3-1 in the series, I'd be very worried. But, you know, I think right now they're sitting in a pretty good place, and he doesn't seem too concerned, and the coach doesn't seem too concerned. So, well, I mean, everybody kind of agrees that this is going to hamper him a little bit, at least in the short term, but not enough to alter the arc of the series, it wouldn't appear. I mean, the Sixers have really come into the playoffs playing much better than I expected.
Well, yes, you and I, let's be honest, thought we picked Toronto to win this thing in 7 games, and right now I'm pretty confident that's not going to happen. Love to be wrong on this one. I just want to read you. There were a series of reports yesterday from local and national reporters, people who cover the NBA, the insiders. Most of them said, essentially, you know, it's something that he's going to play through and it's a sprain. Shams, who I'd be honest with you and tell you I don't trust because he is a client of Clutch Sports, which is the same thing that Ben Simmons is a client of. And so while he is a national reporter, I feel he's tainted.
Mm-hmm.
Nonetheless, his text was the most concerning one. His tweet, excuse me, he said, "The bigger, currently unconfirmed report is that Embiid possibly has a torn ligament in his right thumb, but hopes to play through it, and it will be about pain tolerance."
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he's got a torn ligament, that's a lot more serious than a sprain. And as they move on through the playoffs, which is a slog, right? I mean, you got to win 4 rounds. You got to win 16 games. Playing every other night, every third night, it's a lot to ask if it is, in fact, a torn ligament.
Right. Well, they were saying they're going to MRI it, but not in Toronto. They're going to wait till they come back to Philadelphia and then determine exactly what the extent of the injury is. But he had his hand in a brace, and he had the thumb in a wrap, so he's obviously got some issue there. And you're right, there's a big difference between a sprain and a torn ligament. If it's a torn ligament, then that's not going to go away. That's something he's going to have to manage and play with. And you don't want to have your best player, and clearly he's your best player, at less than 100% in the championship round.
And by the way, transitioning, he still made one of the best clutch, most iconic shots I have seen a big man take in the NBA in a long time with that thrilling game winner in overtime the other night.
Yeah, it was.
It was spectacular.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't quite Christian Laettner, but it wasn't far off.
So why has this series been so much easier than we expected?
I don't know. I guess maybe it tells you the difference between regular season and postseason. You know, the Toronto beat them 3 out of 4, but that the NBA regular season, that's may not mean exactly what you think it means. Some of it's, you know, you played them at the time you played them, coming off of what? How big was the game in your eyes? How ready were you to play? The regular season, I mean, let's face it, most of these teams go through it with one eye closed.
Yeah, you know? Got 82 games. It's the second night of back-to-back. You're playing in another city. It's like, you know, it's March. You've already played 60 games. Yeah, I agree with you.
I thought that, you know, from a matchup standpoint, I thought that it looked like a tougher series. But, you know, it's become pretty obvious. Certainly the two games in Philadelphia, it's obvious that the Sixers are a better team. In the first two games in Philadelphia, they neutralized what we thought could be a big advantage by the Raptors by not allowing them to dominate the offensive boards. That wasn't so much the case in Toronto, but but it certainly was the case in Philadelphia.
And rebounded them. Right.
And as long as they can hold their own off the glass, then they clearly are the better team, because then Toronto can't get out and run and do the things that they want to do.
Another surprise to me has been, I thought that Nick Nurse was going to outcoach Doc Rivers.
Yeah, I think everybody did.
And Nick Nurse's method of coaching so far has been mostly whining to the referees.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to nominate Doc Rivers for any big awards yet, but he has won 3 games and he's done it. And I was impressed the other night when there's, 2.9 seconds to go in overtime. And this is him on the sideline.
George, this is you. Danny, you're taking the ball out. On the hit. Bam! Right when he gets past you, George, you're running out. Tobias, you're picking him, and then you're popping.
Go early, Danny.
All right?
And it worked to a T.
Yeah, just the way you drew it up.
It did. Again, I'm not putting Doc in the Hall of Fame for that one play call, but when you are watching a game and they take you there and you see the coach do it and it works exactly like that and they win the game, hey, give credit where it is. We've ripped Doc Rivers a lot this year.
Yes, we have.
With cause.
Mm-hmm.
He deserves to be praised right now.
Yeah, true.
Okay.
True. And the other part of it is another rare NBA moment when the players actually did what the coach told them to do.
They paid attention.
How many times do you see the guy diagram the play, call it out, everybody's assignment, the horn sounds, the guys walk out on the floor, and then they just throw it in bounds, and they do whatever they want to do.
They didn't have Scottie Pippen sulking on the bench
This time, the coach draws up the play, the players go out and execute it, and you win. Gee, what a concept.
Tobias Harris with like the double screen was great. Okay, want to move on to something else. We will return to all these issues. You're invited to give us a call, 215-592-9494. We got a lot in the show today, Ray. This is going to be a 3-hour sprint.
Right.
By the way, there is so much news going on right now. We decided to hold off Tell Us Your Story this week.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to give short shrift to any of the big stories going on. Tell Us Your Story will return. Actually, not next week. It's the NFL draft.
Right.
The week after that, we got a couple good guests lined up. Okay, next issue. Speaking of a shocker, this week, out of nowhere as far as we knew,
mm-hmm.
The best coach in this town decides to retire early. I want to play a little bit. This is Jay Wright yesterday talking about his decision to retire.
I started to feel just like I didn't have the edge that I've always had, where it just, the edge always came natural to me. And I started evaluating it. You know, sometimes, you know, I would never have to think about anything I did. I would just go into a meeting, go into a team meeting, go into a practice, had everything set. So I started thinking, like, better get yourself fired up here. You better, let's go. And I said, these players, we always ask our players, you're either 100% in or you're against us. And I always thought, you know, Father and Mark, Justin Gamella, part of this process was them convincing me not to do this, trying to convince me not to do this. And they're great. It's salesmen, intelligent people. One of the times they said, well, 70% of you is as good as anybody else, which I appreciated, but we could never coach that way. You know, we couldn't ask the players, you got to give 100%, and I'm giving 70%. So I just knew it was the right time.
Ray, your thoughts?
100% authentic, and I believe every word of it. you know, a lot of times in situations like this, people, players, coaches walk away and they have their final press conference, and a lot of guys say what they think they should be saying under the circumstances, but you sit there and you listen and you say, yeah, you know, I don't know what I believe all that. In Jay Wright's case, I believe 100% of it. I think he, and it was clear in his exposition yesterday that he said that he had arrived at this decision during the course of the year. That it was something that he knew that at the end of this year, I'm walking away. And the only ones who knew it were his wife, his immediate family, and his and the superiors at Villanova. But everybody kept the secret. He didn't want to do the farewell tour. He didn't want all of that stuff.
And I want to emphasize that for a moment, okay?
Right.
Because to me, that is tremendously significant. All these coaches and players, and listen, I don't begrudge them.
No, not at all. They've earned it.
But, you know, with Mike Krzyzewski, you had the whole year, oh, this is Mike Krzyzewski's last game here, and this is his last home game. And he didn't want that victory lap.
Right.
And that is a rare, rare thing. I give him a lot of credit for it. Again, I don't begrudge a guy who does it.
No, not at all.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar had the greatest one of all time, where you gave him a rocking chair at every place he went.
Every arena, when it was final game there, they had a night honoring him.
Yeah.
And they should. He was the leading scorer in the game's history.
But that Jay Wright wanted no part of that.
Right.
Just wanted to, you know, excuse. It was what John Chaney said when he was done. Excuse me while I disappear.
Right.
And that's how Jay did it. And the other thing that really struck me in this regard is he's only 60.
Right.
Which is young for anybody to retire. And coaches don't retire. Coaches just keep going.
Yeah, I know.
And he you know, God bless him. I don't know what he plans to do. I mean, he certainly has the right to go and lay down on a beach and play golf all day if that's what he wants to do.
Absolutely.
Good for him. Enjoy his family. Or maybe he find, you know, he says he's going to be involved with the program. I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Well,
I mean,
he's going to be.
What are you going
to
do?
Yeah, he's going to be an assistant to the president.
Yeah.
So I, knowing Jay a little bit, I think he understands that he has to keep his distance from the basketball.
I agree, and so I, mean, I don't
he's
know
got,
what that
I mean,
means.
Kyle Neptune can't. It's going to be hard enough to escape the shadow of Jay Wright. He can't afford to have that shadow be a real shadow every day at practice. So I think that Jay's smart enough to know that I have to just disappear from the basketball program. But be part of the university, be an ambassador for the university, be an advisor to the president, be a presence on the campus, all that kind of stuff. It's very positive, and he could certainly do that. But I think he's really going to keep his distance. Remember when John Wooden stepped down at UCLA? I mean, there was the greatest college basketball coach ever, and retired, and everybody said, "Boy, what's it going to be like to follow him?" He maintained his office in the athletic building.
Right? I don't remember.
And he continued to go to the games and sit behind the bench.
Oh, that's not good. Who replaced him as coach? Do you remember?
God, I can't remember.
I don't, but it's, you know, we've always said replacing a legend is a really hard thing to do.
Yeah, well,
and it will be hard for Kyle Neptune, no question about it.
No question. Now, he certainly comes in with the blessing of Jay. I mean, he was Jay's assistant, and he was obviously the guy that Jay wanted. So he comes in with the blessings of the guy going out, which is helps. But, I mean, the first time they lose a home game or the first time they blow a 10-point lead in the last 4 minutes, you know, all of a sudden people are going to say, I don't know if he's the guy.
Well, here's what Kyle Neptune has to live up to. This is the last 9 seasons of Jay Wright. 2 national titles, 3 Final Four runs, 7 Big East regular season titles, 5 Big East tournament titles, 22-6 in NCAA tournament games.
Right. Amazing.
22-6, 263-45 overall. 83% win percentage, and in Big East regular season games, 130-31. I mean, nobody can expect to do that. Nobody. So I do, you know, you hope that the alums, that the people who have interest, that the fan base says, okay, you know, we're starting over. We gotta have realistic expectations and allow this guy to grow what he's got to grow his way. Things may change. So with Jay, is this a Dick Vermeil burnout without the popping neck veins?
I think so. I think so. I think it's just, you know, if you raise the bar as high as Jay raised it, you reach a point where you just say, how can I get, you know, you raise it to a point where even you can't get over it, you know? And I think that that's kind of what it was. And the pressure that builds on you, the expectation that builds on you, the demands of it, the demands of the job, the time, the recruiting, the pressure, the travel, the responsibility of the kids, you know, making sure that they're going to class, making sure everything's kind of in place. I mean, it's, they're your responsibility. And I think, I don't know that every college basketball coach feels it, but I think he did. I think he felt like he was responsible for these kids, not just as athletes, but as students and as citizens. And that's one of the great, I mean, you read off all the statistics, and we all know the statistics, how many games he won, his winning percentage, the two, all the Final Fours, the two championships. But the other part of it that's equally amazing, if not more amazing, was he did it all without a hint of scandal.
Yes.
I mean his kids, by and large, graduated. There was never any misbehavior, kids getting in trouble off
the
campus.
The kids graduated is a big deal. It was not a one-and-done school.
No.
I mean, Krzyzewski stayed successful. These kids went to Duke for a year, and then they left.
Right.
You go to play for Jay, you're going to play for Jay for the long term.
Yeah, and even the kids who did leave early all said they were going to come back and get their degree, and they have, by and large. So, I mean, he built this tremendous winning program without the advantages that went to the bigger state schools. He did all that, and did it while running a clean program at a time when you hardly ever find those anymore.
Yeah.
So he made it work on every front, but there's no question that it was a total absorption 24/7 job that I think just finally wore him down.
An amazing legacy, and I will say, and I know this is going to sound stupid and self-centered and so on, but I think it's more than me. He made me a Villanova fan,
mm-hmm.
and I was not a Villanova fan.
Yeah, I know.
I mean,
that.
I worked at St. Joe's, so I had my loyalty there for a long time, but I always carried the Raleigh Massimino grudge, break up the Big Five, that whole thing. There was the other four schools, and there was Villanova, and then that bugged me. And Jay, I think Jay worked, I mean, it wasn't his primary motivation, but he knew people in town felt that way. Whenever you would hear Jay talk, he would bring in Philadelphia basketball.
Always.
He would talk about the Big Five, big part of Coaches Against Cancer, the whole thing, part of the fraternity, and ran everything that you said, and his terrific personality took people like me, who didn't used to root for Villanova, and made us root for Villanova. He put the whole metropolitan area behind Villanova. You know, it stopped being the nonsense talk of like, well, it's not a Philadelphia school.
Right.
That faded away. Not entirely, but it faded away. And it's because of him.
Right.
Greatest legacy he's that of anybody in this team.
Well, the funny part is you go back, you dial the clock back 21 years to when he was hired. And when he was hired, there was a lot of Jay Wright, Hofstra. I mean, really? I mean, this is the guy who's going to take over the program? He's going to take over Villanova? I mean, there were a lot of people that were scratching their heads saying, I don't know. And then he came in and merely became the greatest coach in a town that has produced many, many great college basketball coaches, Hall of Famers, worthy Hall of Famers. He came in and accomplished more than any of them. And did it with real style and real grace. So I was shocked when, you know, my wife walked into the room the other night and said, hey, I just saw it online, Jay Wright's resigning. I said, what? I mean, talk about one you never saw coming. But, you know, he did it the right way. And I hope, and you could see the emotion yesterday, how tough this was for him. I mean, how many times he choked up.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But it was, I think it was a lot of, I think, I went through it with Dick Vermeil in 82.
Yeah.
That wasn't a surprise because I think.
No, people saw that coming. That was the year of the strike and everything kind of went south and Bloom was off the road.
Those of us that were around Dick saw the strain that he was under. And so when that came along, it was not a shock. This, to me, was a shock.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, listen, they got to the Final Four, and nobody got a sense of it, so yes.
No.
All right, one other thing. As I said, we have so much to bring up today in terms of Jay Wright, in terms of, I mean, the big story, the Sixers play this afternoon. We're going to talk about that a lot. We have a couple of good guests to talk about that. In terms of the NFL draft, which we're going to do the Ray Dettinger draft report in the next segment. I see we already have a caller who wants to talk about the draft. Andy, we'll get to you in the next segment. In terms of the Phillies, in terms of everything else, I want to work just a little Eagles into the first segment.
All right.
And I didn't want to start it with a big, big issue. But I do want
to go from the gun. Steps up. There's room in front of him. Looks deep. Zings it downfield. It's caught. Arthego Whiteside strolls in. Touchdown, Eagles. Joe Flacco making it happen.
Now, Ray, we didn't get enough of that over the last 2 years.
No.
I'm not referring to Flacco.
Mm-hmm.
I had to find the J.J. Arcega-Whiteside highlight, and to be honest, it wasn't easy.
Mm-hmm.
But that was one. In an effort to save his disappointing career, it was announced this week that J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, by the way, 6'2", 225.
Which, right.
So he's not the biggest guy in the locker room. Is going to be moving from wide receiver to tight end and thus rekindle his burnt-out career. Ray,
right.
I'll ask this as openly as I can. Does this have even a shot in hell?
Well, it depends on what your expectations are.
Make the roster and be a contributor.
I mean, are you talking on the Rob Gronkowski scale? Are you expecting this to be a total reinvention?
No, a contributor.
Well, I think that they could. I think if you just think of him in terms of being your number two tight end and a guy who's going to play on all your special teams, can he be that? Yeah, he can be that. I mean, you've already got the tight end that you're really going to throw the ball to in Dallas Goedert. So what you're talking about now is who's the number two when you go two tight ends?
Well, they got the Jack Stoll guy who didn't impress me. They got that Tyree Jackson, that 6'7" kid who sounded great until we saw him play, and then he got hurt. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, the coaches last summer at training camp were very excited about Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, he's an intriguing package. I mean, he's 6'7", he's almost 6'8", 250 pounds, but he's a quarterback who's learning how to play tight end. So he's got a long way to go before he's NFL ready. And then he finishes the year with a knee injury that who knows when he's going to recover from that.
Yeah, we're off the topic. My question is J.J. Arcega-Whiteside ever going to be worth a damn? That's the official question.
Depending on how you want to use him. I mean, is he going to be a revelation? I guess that's kind of what you're asking. Will he go to tight end and become a real significant contributor?
Bring him in a third down, make some clutch catches, 20 to 30 catches over the course of the year, throw a block or two, be a contributor. My vote is I would be shocked if he is. You know, I guess they'd look for mismatches or whatever.
That's it.
But you seem to – I'm sensing from you an affirmative.
Only because
– I was here to mock J.J. Arcega-Whiteside.
Well, no.
You're here to praise him.
No. I understand where I'm setting the bar. I'm setting the bar pretty low. You're going to have that other tight end. And the coaches really thought that he was a good special teams player.
Oh, and they blocker. They told us how he can block.
And he's a willing cover guy, so he will do a lot of the dirty work on special teams, which you need somebody to do that. And if your expectations are that the second tight end isn't going to be the focal point of the offense, that all you need for him to come in and maybe make a catch here and there and block a little bit, can he do that? Yeah, I think he can do that.
Is it too early to make a stupid football bet? Because I would bet he doesn't make the roster.
Really?
Yes. What do you want to bet? Doesn't have to be dinner. It could be something smaller.
That he doesn't make the roster?
Yeah.
That when they kick it off in September, that he's
not a Philadelphia Eagle.
Really?
Yeah, I'll make the bet. What do you want to bet?
He's not even on the practice squad? That he's not even...
The practice squad's not on the varsity.
That he's not... Okay, the bet is...
He's got to be on the varsity. He's got to dress.
He's got to be one of the 53.
Yes.
Opening day,
yes.
He's one of your 53
yes.
wearing the Kelly Green.
Yeah.
When do you want to... No, he won't be wearing Kelly Green. Wearing a uniform.
Yeah.
I think he will be.
Well, we got a bet.
All right.
Figure what? Again, I don't want to do a $300 dinner, but I would bet, you know, lunch. I'll bet. Here's what I'll bet. 6 cups of coffee versus 6 Diet Cokes.
Fair enough.
There you go. We got a deal. All right. Coming up on the show today, Amy Fadul, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
Leslie Goodell, Amy Fadul. I've confused them. Amy Fadul is going to join us to talk about Sixers.
Mm-hmm.
Really interesting guest in the 11 o'clock hour, Jack McCallum, one of the great basketball writers in this country over the last 30, 40 years. And by the way, a guy who wrote a biography of Jerry West is going to come on with, and by the way, a guy who once worked with Ray Dinger back in the day.
Worked with me at the Philadelphia Bulletin.
Is going to come on and talk with us about how realistic or not the hit HBO show Winning Time is.
I have a feeling I know where Jack's coming down on this. Just a wild guess.
We got a great Shibe this week in Philadelphia sports history that may involve Allen Iverson. We're going to take your calls on all nature of things. Coming up next, after the break, Ray Dinger gives his NFL draft preview. 215-592-9494. We've got room for you. Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack, now on 94 WIP.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer,
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait. There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Ray Dinger, Glenn Mack now. We are now a mere 5 days away from the... Wait, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. 5 days away from the NFL draft, which means it's time for the Ray Dinger NFL draft preview. Ray, can I actually start it by asking you a question to set it up?
Go right ahead.
All right, so I've been reading all the draft stuff, and I would love to see the Eagles focus on defense. And two guys who I respect both kind of wrote the same thing in the last week. Daniel Jeremiah, who I believe you respect, Zach Berman of The Athletic, who's good.
Mm-hmm.
But both more or less said, if everything falls perfectly for the Eagles, if it all falls the Eagles' way, the dream pick would be Kyle Hamilton, Notre Dame safety.
Mm-hmm.
To which I thought, oh.
Oh, you like that?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Possible? Are they dreaming? Zach Berman driving over to New Jersey for the marijuana dispensary?
No.
He may live in Jersey. I don't know.
No, it is possible. It is possible. I wouldn't say that it's likely, but possible. And this ties in very nicely with the position I was going to talk about today, because today I was going to talk about safeties. I mean, last week we talked cornerbacks, so this week I was going to talk about safeties, and then the Kyle Hamilton conversation begins. For the folks who don't know who Kyle Hamilton is, he's a safety from Notre Dame, and he's 6 feet four and he's 220 pounds, which is unusually big for a safety, but has really terrific skills. I mean, a really, really unique kind of unicorn player back there. You just don't see safeties who have his kind of size and his kind of range and his kind of instinct. But he's got the full package right now. And there are a lot of people, I would say at the end of the college football season, that were projecting Kyle Hamilton as a top three pick. I mean, they were putting him in, and he was going to go not just in the first round, but in the top three or four. But as often happens, you know, you get into your testing and the guys get out their stopwatches and then all of a sudden, oh, geez, I thought he was going to run a 4.45. Now he's running a 4.6. Uh-oh. And then the word starts getting out and the guy starts to drop and he drops a little bit, then he drops a little bit more and he drops a little bit more. And now who knows how it's going to play out next week? But based on some conversations that I have had with some people who are in the personnel business, they think it's entirely possible that Kyle Hamilton will fall out of the top 10, which would put him in 11, 12, which would put him within reach of the Eagles. Now, I don't think you can sit there at 15 and expect him to fall into your lap, but if he falls out of the top 10, Howie Roseman would be in a position where he could package their number one and maybe one of their two third-round picks and move up four spots and have a shot at picking a guy who is, number one, clearly the best safety in this draft. There's not even any question about that. And a guy that not all that long ago was being talked about as a top-three pick overall. Yes, in answer to your question, the Jeremiah-Zach Berman scenario is possible.
And, Ray, correct me if I'm wrong, safety not currently a strength of this franchise.
No. No, at the moment... By my reckoning, right now they have one. You know, they've got Anthony Harris, who's the guy they signed last year.
It's not great.
Who, you know, came in last year and was frankly underwhelming. You know, he wasn't terrible, but he certainly wasn't a difference-making player. They've let Rodney McLeod go. You know, and they've got a couple of other guys that are just kind of there, but they aren't guys that you want to go into the season and feel good about. So if you have a chance to make a trade up for a couple of spots and get a Kyle Hamilton, boy, I think that would be pretty shrewd, and I also think it could very well happen.
Nice. All right, short of that, other safeties to look at.
Okay, other safeties to look at. My top five. My number two guy is Louis Cine. you're gonna roll your eyes when I tell you this. He plays at the University of Georgia. I mean, how many Georgia?
Oh, there you go.
How many Georgia guys have I talked about? All on defense, by the way. But he was the best safety on the Georgia team. He was actually the leading tackler on the Georgia team. 6'1", 200 pounds, ran a 4.49, can really move it. Good, solid tackler. And probably the most physical of all the safeties in this draft. If you're looking at a guy that's going to come up and really stick a guy with the football, a guy that's going to discourage receivers from coming over the middle, Louis Cine is your guy. The next guy is a Penn Stater, and it's Jaquan Brisker, who 6'1", 205, ran a 4.5. Another solid player, very good at getting off blocks, very good form wrap up, take him to the ground tackler. I think he's more of a zone player than, say, a one-on-one, man-to-man player. I think he has some limitations in coverage, so this would fall into the lap of your defensive coordinator, that if you want to play a lot of zone and you want to play your safeties in the box and not give them a whole lot of man-to-man coverage responsibilities, I think Jaquan Brisker would be a good fit for you. Jalen Petrie is my number four from Baylor. A guy is 6 feet tall, 195 pounds, very fast, 4.4. He's more of a ball hawk, take the ball away kind of guy. If you're looking for a guy who's just a good, solid tackler, sort of an in-the-box safety, Brisker is probably be more your taste. If you're looking for a guy who's going to play center field and get you some interceptions and get you some takeaways, Jalen Petrie is probably that guy. Mm-hmm. And my number five guy is, and another really good player, is Dexton Hill. Same sort of size, 6 feet, 190 pounds, also 4.4 speed. Probably the best pure cover guy. He went to the University of Michigan. If you're looking, and again, this comes down to how you want to use your safeties. If you want to look for a safety who is scheme versatile, in other words, a guy that can play deep, a guy who can play in the box, but can also, if a team goes to a spread formation, move up and play man for man on, say, a slot receiver, Daxton Hill has that kind of one-on-one cover ability. He could actually probably play a little corner if you needed him. He could play in the slot if you needed him. He also can blitz off the edge. He's got some versatility to him, but more of a cover guy than a hitter. But clearly, clearly, the class of this group is Kyle Hamilton from Notre Dame.
Nice. Like it. We will do more tomorrow. I would love to see the Eagles get one of those guys. All right, let's go to Andy, who's been hanging. He's got a draft question. Andy, what's on your mind today?
Good morning, fellas. Always a pleasure. Always a pleasure, man.
Thank you.
Good talking to you guys. Hey, Ray, we talked about a couple weeks ago. We talked about, in a perfect world, the three picks. We definitely would use them on defense. Now, we're down to the two. And we agreed that safety, edge rusher, and linebacker would be our priority. Mm-hmm. Now, my question to you is, and I'm going to hang out, I'm going to try to be as fast as I can to see your opinion on this. Would there be any chance, besides Kyle Hamilton, which, hey, remember Don Burrows, remember the Blade, Ray, 6'4"?
Oh, sure.
I would have a 6'4" safety, man. Dude, I would love to have him, but I don't know. According to other sources, they said they might trade up to get Jordan Davis. Now, we talked about him, and we said, without a doubt, would we grab him as an interior lineman because he has so many sacks again with him. He can rush the passer. He can shut the run down. Now, Travis Jones, he's a run stuffer. We talked about him. Now, his stock has moved up a little bit with Avante Wyatt. But my question to you is, would you do the Jordan Davis, and would you try to get, for the second round, Devin Lloyd? Because I would hate to see Devin Lloyd go to the Cowboys and pair up with Parsons. That would be pretty tragic right there. Would you do the Jordan Davis and Devin Lloyd, or would you do the Jordan Davis and the Kobe Dean if that's what the situation would have in hand?
All right. Well, you're thinking you've really locked in on two positions there. You've locked in on defensive tackle and linebacker. I really like Jordan Davis. I don't know. There's a real there are very different opinions on Jordan Davis.
Yeah, did you see what's his name? Greg Cosell?
No.
Said he was on with our pal Ross Tucker and said he doesn't move people.
Well, yeah, but nobody moves him either.
I'm merely quoting the guy, Ray.
He's he would not be, that doesn't surprise me. Jordan Davis would not be a Greg Cosell kind of player. I think that, and I've heard that from, and it's not just Greg, I mean, I've heard from some other people too, is that they question, a lot of people question the value of drafting defensive tackles because everybody's thinking in terms of pass rush, and they don't think that you're going to get pass rush from interior linemen. Everybody, that's why everybody wants to load up on the edge guys. And look, you've got a lot of good edge guys in this draft, I understand that. But I think people kind of look at Jordan Davis and characterize him as Haloti Ngata, and he's a lot more athletic and a lot quicker off the ball than Ngata is, which I think to me translates into interior pass rush. Is he going to be Aaron Donald? No, I don't think he's going to be that. But for the people who suggest that, well, you're not going to get any pass rush from him, and that he's a guy that every time you go to your nickel coverage, he's going to have to come off the field. I don't think that's true.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's a good enough athlete, and if you've watched enough film of him, I mean, my goodness, how many 350-pound guys do you see running sideline to sideline making tackles?
Yeah, I'm good with him.
I mean, he can do all that stuff. So, I mean, there are some people that are very, very high on him. I'm kind of in that camp. And then there are other people that just say, oh, he's just another big guy. And I honestly don't know where the Eagles fall in this. But to me, if you put him on the Eagles defensive line in a rotation with Hargrave and Cox, I think that you're a team that's going to be pretty formidable on the defensive line.
Works for me. Our friend Linda Mbala is with us. What's up, our friend Linda Mbala?
Two of my favorite fellas, Mr. Didinger, Leticia, and Ramona Bulldog were here to see everyone yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And when I told them, because they're both rescue pups,
of course,
and I told them I was going to speak to you, they slobbered all over the new rug downstairs. I just wanted you to know that they
people
were celebrating and everything.
People often do that when they hear my name. Yeah,
they
slobber all over the rugs. Yeah, that's not uncommon, Linda.
Mr. Macnell, happy birthday, dear.
Oh, thank you so much.
I was going to let you get away with not saying anything.
Well, listen, you sent me a card, which I appreciate very much, and I thank you so much for this.
Two short things. My Phillies, renewed hope. My Sixers, hair raising. One last thing. Or did he please?
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what the Eagles do. None of these short little speedy guys. I want a monster.
Oh.
Okay? A huge monster like Lurch.
Is Ted Hendricks in this draft, Ray?
I love you. I'll see you later.
All right, Lynn, we love you. That would work. That was what do you call it? Our favorite longest yard, wasn't there? The character.
Oh yeah.
I forget the name of the actor, but he was the huge guy.
Yes, yeah. Richard
Kiel.
Richard Kiel.
That's it.
Yeah, and he played the big massive guy in the middle of the defensive line.
That's what Linda wants for the Eagles.
That's good.
I mean,
well, Jordan Davis certainly fits the bill.
Yeah. 215-592-9494. We'll get a little Phillies into the conversation. We get back. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.
Hoxberger bent at the waist, looks in for the sign. Now ready. Here's the 2-2 pitch. Swung on, ground ball, right side. It's through. Base hit. Harper scores. Castellanos coming around third. The throw from right is late. And Alec Bohm has put the Phillies on top with a two-run single here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
All right, Ray, we've learned a couple of things. One, all right, the Phillies aren't going to go 162-0.
That's already been established.
That's been established. A little bit of a rough start. Coming back. The only thing that concerns me, and again, it is April 23rd, so nothing concerns me, except the Mets keep winning.
Yes.
Right? The Braves are losing. The Marlins, other than beating the Phillies, aren't doing anything.
No.
But the Mets are winning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the Mets to get off to, an 8-game lead, and then you got to be chasing them all summer.
Yeah. What is it today? A couple of days ago, it was up to five games. I mean, that they were up.
I believe the Mets are 9-4, maybe. The Phillies are 7-8. So that's five. Then that's five.
Okay. Yeah. That was where it was
four
the last
half,
time I saw it. Yeah, you're right. You don't want them to run away and hide.
Right. Okay. But what you heard on that highlight was the game-winning RBI last night, bottom of the eighth inning, as I'm driving home from my son's house, last day of Passover. Alex and Nathan, phenomenal Seder. Anyway, we're driving home. I turn on the guys, and there's Scott Fransky. As the Phillies are down 2-1, load up the bases, and boom, drives in two runs.
Mm-hmm.
He is now hitting .440 with an on-base of .455, a slugging percentage of .640. He also, Ray, as you are well aware, having given him the nickname of the corner butcher,
mm-hmm.
one of two, can't field.
Correct.
But he hits.
Yes.
What do you do?
Well, you got to keep him in the lineup. You just got to figure out where to put him. You know, I thought that last year he didn't hit or field.
Correct.
and people pretty much wanted to wash their hands of him altogether. And I, as much as I kind of avert my eyes when he's playing third base, but I really was not prepared to give up on him as an offensive player because I think that what we saw the first year was legit. I think he can swing the bat. I think he's got value. I think he's a guy that can fit nicely into your lineup. You just got to find a position for him because it's not third base.
No,
but it looks like they're determined to keep putting them out there.
Well, because you got Hoskins at first, who's, I mean, not after a great start, but he's after a decent start. And, you know, when Hoskins starts hitting home runs in bunches, Hoskins is a good offensive
player. Yeah, he's
hot,
cold. He's cold right now. I mean, he's striking out a ton.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's still, I think his OPS is like .750. He's not disastrous at this point, but he's not doing what you know he can do. As we've said many times, they have too many guys who play the same positions. And now Harper's got the elbow thing, so he's DH.
So he's purely a DH.
So you got Castellanos and Schwarber both out in the outfield. I don't have a good answer. And by the way, Camargo looks – I'm not saying Camargo is going to be an everyday player, let alone a good one, but I think he looks like a nice, valuable guy to pick up.
Yeah, but he's not a shortstop.
You know, no,
and
I
that's
know.
Where they're playing them because they don't have a shortstop right now. I mean, they're a weird defensive team. They have a whole bunch of guys playing out of position.
Yes, although defense is not what's cost them games by and large, ironically.
No, it's cost them a couple along the way, but not a ton. But yeah, I mean, they got a whole bunch of guys that play in positions that they shouldn't be playing. I you know, to me, Bohm is. He's a first baseman or a DH. He's not a third baseman.
So the answer is they got to make a trade at some point this season and say, hey, you know what? We can get a number three starting pitcher for Reese Hoskins or for Alec Bohm. And then, therefore, you solve the problem of too many guys at that end of the defensive spectrum and you get something good in return.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I kind of think that's where this is headed, yeah.
Okay. And by the way, one other thing on the Phillies. I was so unhappy to see Odubel Herrera back.
Well, you knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming. I was in a pleasant denial.
Mm. Well, I mean, if Mickey Moniak...
I was ignoring it.
If Mickey Moniak hadn't been hit by the pitch, you know, we might not be here right now.
I know.
But the fact is he's out for a few more weeks, and they needed somebody to play center field.
Yeah, I know.
I don't
like him as a guy, and I don't like him as a player. You know, it's like
no.
there's nothing redeeming about Odubel Herrera.
No, and I don't think a whole lot of people expected to see him back in the picture this year. I think they kind of thought at the end of last year, okay, that's the end of him. We can certainly do better. You would hope you could do better. But now he's back, and right now you don't have a whole lot of answers in center field. So, yeah, Odubel Herrera is back in all of our lives.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to go well.
No.
All right, let us talk to Scott in Florida. He's got some thoughts on the NFL draft. Scott, what do you got?
Well, good morning. Actually, I called Howard. I got to say quickly, he said greatest event in Philadelphia.
Wait, you called Howard today?
Yeah, but I was pushed over to you, which is even better.
Okay.
It's twice as good, okay? But the event in Philadelphia, the historic event in Philadelphia would be the ringing of the Liberty Bell.
Okay.
But nothing can beat that.
I have no idea what that refers to, but please give us something that's relevant to our show.
Okay, now I've got a very important pre-draft trade, okay?
Yeah.
we're gonna trade Harry Roseman to WIP for Ray Dinninger.
All right. Well, next time you call, see if Howard can get you on by the end of his show. I think that would be better for all of us. I think that's a better fit.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't think that the Roseman.
Howie's not that good in the radio. I've heard.
I don't think. Yeah. I don't think the Roseman for Dittinger transaction is going to happen.
As I said, I've done a show with Howie Roseman. Ray, I'll take you.
Really?
Selfishly. I'd rather you be here than.
Oh, that's right. He did one whole season. He did a Monday.
More than one, yeah.
Ask the GM show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They did it live from Chickies, didn't
yeah.
they?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So Howie would come over from the office and
you know how many sound
rub elbows with the unwashed masses.
Oh, and listen, I like Howie. I think Howie gets a bum rap sometimes. And I think some people are biased against Howie because he doesn't have that big deep voice and he's not 6 foot four and thus in many people's mind he's not a football guy, right?
Correct. Correct. Okay. That's the ubiquitous term.
Right, but he did not always help himself when we're doing the show and somebody say like, "Hey, Howie, what about this?" He'd go like, "Hey, far out, man."
Mm-hmm.
And we got all these sound drops that we used for like 3 or 4 years.
100%, man.
That was
100%, man.
There you go.
Certain quotes will just live forever.
Again,
that's one of them.
I like Howie.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't want to do the show with him.
No.
No. I'll do the show with you.
It's probably ill-advised for a general manager to do a radio show. You know, let the coaches do it, let the players do it.
Yeah, because he's got to lie too.
Yeah, the GM is really the GM in the NFL is really one of those better to be seen and not heard.
Well, let me ask you
kind of
this.
Roles.
Okay, because we don't do a lot of those these days. What we do more now is the Monday, the day after call to Angelo.
Right.
Right, and Girardi did. We don't have it this year, but we had the Girardi thing with the Gabe Kapler thing with Angelo. Oh, that was something special. And we've done those kind of shows before, right?
Yeah,
we haven't done a coach's show in a while, but those things go back in history on stations all the time, right?
Sure.
How many of those were ever any good?
No, none.
Right?
None.
Was there ever a coach from your experience? The Buddy one, the Buddy TV
show. Yeah, the Buddy one.
That was fun.
Because
he didn't care.
Because Buddy just didn't care.
Yeah.
Buddy would just say whatever he wanted to say.
Right, he'd rip guys.
Yeah, I mean, most coaches and even players, you know, they know what they can say and what they can't say. You're not going to get them to rip anybody. You're not going to get them to talk badly about the team that they're going to play. You're not going to get them to, after a bad loss, tell you who screwed up. You know, they're going to cover. You know, they're going to double talk, circle back, all that kind of stuff.
Nor do they want to provide so-called bulletin board material for the other team, so they'll give you the Lou Holtz, like, oh, we're really nervous about playing Navy. It's like,
right.
Come on.
Right.
You know the worst of all those was the Andy Reid one.
Yeah.
That was the worst of the worst. And only would take questions that were pre-screened for content.
Yeah, well, Marion Campbell did the same thing.
Is that right?
When Marion was the head coach, yeah, and I was guest on that show one time, and I came in, and the producer said to me, "Okay, here are the questions." And I said, "Wait a minute, people aren't going to call in." He said, "Well, they're going to make it sound like they're calling."
Yeah,
in,
well,
but
yeah.
They're actually on tape because yeah. Marion wanted to be able to pre-screen the questions that are being asked them. Said, well, that's no fun.
Yeah,
but
that was Andy.
But as you pointed out, correctly pointed out, that Buddy just didn't care.
Right.
I mean, Buddy just didn't flat
that
out
guy
didn't
is
care.
A waste of a uniform on our team, and we may move on.
Yeah, and, you know, who the hell are the Cowboys? We beat them all
Loves
the time.
Anyway.
I mean, he didn't care.
First story I ever covered for the Inquirer, ever, when I joined, is they sent me to Ribbit to cover Steve Fredericks doing the Buddy Ryan show.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
That was my introduction. And Buddy was new, right? And there was a woman there wearing a T-shirt that said, "My favorite teams are the Eagles and whoever beats the Dallas Cowboys."
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very snug T-shirt.
Okay.
And she wore it well.
Buddy would have liked that.
Oh, yeah. And she's jumping up and down, and Buddy sees it and goes like, "That's right. That's right." And he was just kind of, I got the sense, like, learning why he, you know, like how this was a big deal.
Right.
And learning how to play it.
Right.
And he did. And he and Steve, by the way, that was a fun show. They had a good relationship.
Him and Steve.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When Steve got cancer and was in the a heart attack. Steve had a heart attack and was in the hospital. Buddy came to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Buddy said, "What can I do for you?" And then for the next week, Buddy Ryan drove to Steve's house in Havertown and walked his dog.
Really?
How about that?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I got to get this call in before the top of the hour. It's an old friend, and I hope he's feeling well. Mitchy Tools, how are you feeling, Mitch?
I'm doing good. Hey,
good.
Hi, Ray. How you doing?
Hello, Mitch. Nice to hear from you again.
I think it's the last time I talked to you. Sopranos was on HBO. It's been a
I think you're right.
Yeah, it's been a while. You know me with sports, I'll talk a little bit, but then there's a couple little other things. I mean, the Phillies, it's too early to talk about them, you know, but the Eagles, we do need defense, you know, like an Andre the Giant kind of guy. We need somebody to, you know, stop the run and all
first
that.
First we got Lurch, and now we've got Andre the Giant, Ray. This is a hell of a defense.
Yeah. God bless. I have what you know me with movies and TVs. I have something on Netflix. Have you guys ever seen Bloodline?
Oh, love it! Oh yeah,
that is great. Sometimes I'm slow on the draw, but this is
no. Yeah, it's a couple of years old, but the first two seasons of that, I don't know if it went more than two, but the first two seasons of that were a very good show.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And the Sixers later this afternoon. I feel really confident they'll wrap it up today. So.
On to Florida. Mitch, be well. Nice to hear from you. We got to take a break coming up this week in Philadelphia Sports History presented by Shipe Sports. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.
Yo, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer.
SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino
and enter for your chance to win.
Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
In for the sign. Now ready. Here's the 2-2 pitch. Swung on, ground ball, right side, it's through. Base hit. Harper scores. Castellanos coming around third. The throw from right is late. And Alec Bohm has put the Phillies on top with a two-run single here in the bottom of the eighth inning.
All right, Ray, we've learned a couple of things. One, all right, the Phillies aren't going to go 162-0.
That's already been established.
That's been established. A little bit of a rough start. Coming back. The only thing that concerns me, and again, it is April 23rd, so nothing concerns me, except the Mets keep winning.
Yes.
Right? The Braves are losing. The Marlins, other than beating the Phillies, aren't doing anything.
No.
But the Mets are winning.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want the Mets to get off to, you know, an 8-game lead, and then you got to be chasing them all summer.
Yeah, what is it today? A couple days ago, it was up to 5 games. I mean, that they were up.
I believe the Mets are 9-4, maybe the Phillies are 7-8. So that's 5. Then that's 5.
Okay, yeah. That was where it was
four
the last
half,
time I saw. Yeah, you're right. You don't want them to run away and hide.
Right. Okay. But what you heard on that highlight was the game-winning RBI last night, bottom of the eighth inning, as I'm driving home from my son's house, last day of Passover. Alex and Nathan, phenomenal Seder. Anyway, we're driving home. I turn on the guys, and there's Scott Fransky. As the Phillies are down 2-1, load up the bases, and Bohm drives in 2 runs.
Mm-hmm.
He is now hitting .440 with an on-base of .455, a slugging percentage of .640. He also, Ray, as you are well aware, having given him the nickname of the corner butcher,
mm-hmm.
one of two, can't field.
Correct.
But he hits.
Yes.
What do you do?
Well, you got to keep him in the lineup. You just got to figure out where to put him. You know, I thought that last year he didn't hit or field.
Correct.
and people pretty much wanted to wash their hands of him altogether. And I, as much as I kind of avert my eyes when he's playing third base, but I was not prepared to give up on him as an offensive player because I think that what we saw the first year was legit. I think he can swing the bat. I think he's got value. I think he's a guy that can fit nicely into your lineup. You just got to find a position for him because it's not third base.
No,
but it looks like they're determined to keep putting them out there.
Well, because you got Hoskins at first, who's, I mean, not after a great start, but he's after a decent start. And, you know, when Hoskins starts hitting home runs in bunches, Hoskins is a good offensive
player. Yeah, he's hot,
cold.
He's cold right now. I mean, he's striking out a ton.
Yeah. But, I mean, he's still, I think his OPS is like 750. He's not disastrous at this point, but he's not doing what you know he can do. As we've said many times, they have too many guys who play the same positions. And now Harper's got the elbow thing, so he's DH.
So he's purely a DH.
So you got Castellanos and Schwarber both out in the outfield. I don't have a good answer. And by the way, Camargo looks – I'm not saying Camargo is going to be an everyday player, let alone a good one, but I think he looks like a nice, valuable guy to pick up.
Yeah, but he's not a shortstop.
You know, no,
and
I
that's
know.
Where they're playing them because they don't have a shortstop right now. I mean, they're a weird defensive team. They have a whole bunch of guys playing out of position.
Yes, although defense is not what's cost them games by and large. Ironically,
no, it's cost them a couple along the way, but not a ton. But yeah, I mean, they got a whole bunch of guys that play in positions that they shouldn't be playing. I to me, Boehm is. He's a first baseman or a DH. He's not a third baseman.
So the answer is they got to make a trade at some point this season and say, hey, you know what? We can get a number three starting pitcher for Rhys Hoskins or for Alec Boehm. And then, therefore, you solve the problem of too many guys at that end of the defensive spectrum and you get something good in return.
Right.
Yeah, that's what I think.
I kind of think that's where this is headed, yeah.
Okay. And by the way, one other thing on the Phillies. I was so unhappy to see Odubel Herrera back.
Well, you knew it was coming.
I knew it was coming. I was in a pleasant denial.
Mm. Well, I mean, if Mickey Moniak...
I was ignoring it.
If Mickey Moniak hadn't been hit by the pitch, you know, we might not be here right now.
I know.
But the fact is he's out for a few more weeks, and they needed somebody to play center field.
Yeah, I know.
I don't
like him as a guy, and I don't like him as a player. There's nothing redeeming about Odubel Herrera.
No, and I don't think a whole lot of people expected to see him back in the picture this year. I think they kind of thought at the end of last year, okay, that's the end of him. We can certainly do better. You would hope you could do better, but now he's back, and right now you don't have a whole lot of answers in center field. So yeah, Odubel Herrera is back in all of our lives.
Mm-hmm. It's not going to go well.
No.
All right, let us talk to Scott in Florida. He's got some thoughts on the NFL draft. Scott, what do you got?
Well, good morning. Actually, I called Howard. I got to say quickly, he said greatest event in Philadelphia.
Wait, you called Howard today?
Yeah, but I was pushed over to you, which is even better.
Okay.
It's twice as good, okay? But the event in Philadelphia, the historic event in Philadelphia, would be the ringing of the Liberty Bell.
Okay.
But nothing can beat that.
I have no idea what that refers to, but please give us something that's relevant to our show.
Okay, now I've got a very important pre-draft trade, okay?
Yeah.
We're gonna trade Harry Roseman to WIP for Ray Dininger.
All right. Well, next time you call, see if Howard can get you on by the end of his show. I think that would be better for all of us. I think that's a better fit.
You think?
Yeah.
I don't think that the Roseman.
Howie's not that good in the radio. I've heard.
I don't think the Roseman for Dininger transaction is going to happen.
As I said, I've done a show with Howie Roseman. Ray, I'll take you.
Really?
Selfishly. I'd rather you be here than
Oh, that's right. He did one whole season. He did a Monday.
More than one, yeah.
Ask the GM show,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They did it live from Chickies, didn't
they?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So Howie would come over from the office and
you know how many sound
rub elbows with the unwashed masses.
Oh, and listen, I like Howie. I think Howie gets a bum rap sometimes. And I think some people are biased against Howie because he doesn't have that big, deep voice and he's not 6'4", and thus, in many people's mind, he's not a football guy, right?
Correct. Correct. Okay. That's the ubiquitous term.
Right, but he did not always help himself when we're doing the show, and he'd somebody say like, "Hey, Howie, what about this?" He'd go like, "Hey, far out, man."
Mm-hmm.
And we got all these sound drops that we used for like 3 or 4 years.
100%, man.
That was
100%, man.
There you go.
There you go. Certain quotes will just live forever.
Again,
that's one of them.
I like Howie.
Yeah, I do too.
I don't want to do the show with him.
No,
no, do the show with you.
It's a, you know, there's probably, it's probably ill-advised for a general manager to do a radio show. You know, let the coaches do it, let the players do it.
Yeah, because he's got to lie, too.
Yeah, the GM is really, the GM in the NFL is really one of those better to be seen and not heard
kind
of roles.
Okay, because we don't do a lot of those these days. What we do more now is the Monday, the day after call to Angelo.
Right.
Right, and Girardi did. We don't have it this year, but we had the Girardi thing with the Gabe Kapler thing with Angelo. Oh, that was something special. And we've done those kind of shows before, right?
Yeah,
we haven't done a coach's show in a while, but those things go back in history on stations all the time, right?
Sure.
How many of those were ever any good?
No, none.
Right,
none.
Was there ever a coach from your experience? The Buddy one, the Buddy TV show.
Yeah, the
show
Buddy
was
one.
That was fun.
Because
he didn't care.
Because Buddy just didn't care.
Yeah. Yeah.
Buddy would just say whatever he wanted to
right.
say.
He'd rip guys.
Yeah, I mean, most coaches and even players, you know, they know what they can say and what they can't say. You're not going to get them to rip anybody. You're not going to get them to talk badly about the team that they're going to play. You're not going to get them to, after a bad loss, tell you who screwed up. You know, they're going to cover. You know, they're going to double talk, circle back, all that kind of stuff.
Nor do they want to provide so-called bulletin board material for the other team, so they'll give you the, you know, the Lou Holtz, like, oh, we're really nervous about playing Navy. It's like,
right.
Come on.
Right.
You know the worst of all those was the Andy Reid one.
Yeah.
That was the worst of the worst. And only would take questions that were pre-screened for content.
Yeah, well, Marion Campbell did the same thing.
Is that right?
When Marion was the head coach, yeah, and I was guest on that show one time, and I came in, and the producer said to me, "Okay, here are the questions." And I said, "Wait a minute, people aren't going to call in." He said, "Well, they're going to make it sound like they're calling."
Yeah,
in,
well,
but
yeah.
They're actually on tape because Marion wanted to be able to pre-screen the questions that are being asked them. I said, well, that's no fun.
Yeah,
but
that was Andy.
But as you pointed out, correctly pointed out, that Buddy just didn't care.
Right.
I mean, Buddy just didn't flat
that
out
guy
didn't
is
care.
A waste of a uniform on our team, and we may move on.
Yeah, and, you know, who the hell are the Cowboys? We beat them all the time.
Anyway.
I mean, he didn't care.
First story I ever covered for the Inquirer, ever, when I joined, is they sent me to Ribbit to cover Steve Frederick's doing the Buddy Ryan show.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
That was my introduction. And Buddy was new, right? And there was a woman there wearing a T-shirt that said, "My favorite teams are the Eagles and whoever beats the Dallas Cowboys."
Mm-hmm.
And it was a very snug T-shirt.
Okay.
And she wore it well.
Buddy would have liked that.
Oh, yeah. And she's jumping up and down, and Buddy sees it and he goes like, "That's right. That's right." And he was just kind of, I got the sense, like, learning why he, you know, how this was a big deal.
Right.
And learning how to play it.
Right.
He did. And he and Steve, by the way, that was a fun show. They had a good relationship.
Him and Steve?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
When Steve got cancer and was in the hospital, or a heart attack, excuse me, Steve had a heart attack and was in the hospital, Buddy came to visit him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Buddy said, "What can I do for you?" And then for the next week, Buddy Ryan drove to Steve's house in Havertown and walked his dog.
Really?
How about that?
That's pretty good.
Yeah. I got to get this call in before the top of the hour. It's an old friend, and I hope he's feeling well. Mitchy Tools, how are you feeling, Mitch?
I'm doing good. Hey,
good.
Hi, Ray. How you doing?
Hello, Mitch. Nice to hear from you again.
I think it's the last time I talked to you. Sopranos was on HBO. It's been a while.
I think you're right.
Yeah, it's been a while. You know me with sports, I'll talk a little bit, but then there's a couple little other things. I mean, the Phillies, it's too early to talk about them, you know, but the Eagles, we do need defense, you know, like an Andre the Giant kind of guy. We need somebody to, you know, stop the run and all that.
First we got Lurch, and now we've got Andre the Giant, Ray. This is a hell of a defense.
Yeah, really, yeah. God bless.
I have, well, you know me with you know, with movies and TVs. I have something on Netflix. Have you guys ever seen Bloodline?
Oh, love it. Oh, yeah.
That is great. Sometimes I'm slow on the draw, but this is...
No, yeah, it's a couple of years old, but the first two seasons of that, I don't know if it went more than two, but the first two seasons of that were a very good show.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And the Sixers, later this afternoon, I feel really confident they'll wrap it up today, so...
On to Florida. Mitch, be well. Nice to hear from you. We got to take a break coming up this week in Philadelphia Sports History, presented by Shipe Sports. Ray and Glenn on 94 WIP.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing.
And Bubba Wallace.
You know what's the worst part of a race? A rain delay.
Sitting around, waiting for the track to dry, is dull.
But instead of waiting, we hang out with Chumba Casino.
Social casino slots, bingo, solitaire, plenty of fun to keep us entertained.
So why let a rain delay slow you down? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.